When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Runner's World Podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson,
Hello.
The digital editor. Ben, what have we got coming up this week?
This week we are talking about the rise of virtual racing with runner and journalist Isaac Williams and professional Zwifter Stephen Cousins. Virtual racing is on the rise, with more and more people signing up to take part of races in the digital realm. But what's the appeal? Will it ever compare to the real thing?
Well, let's find out. Let's find out.
Right then, Pearson, what have you been up to?
Well, I took part in the analogue Half Pint Half, which is a small, unofficial, and it must be said, wildly irresponsible event, which involves the running of 13 miles and drinking of 13 half pints.
Right. So
it's been going for a few years.
This is an event of your making.
This is an unofficial event that I've helped to put on. And this year we ran along the Thames Path.
Lovely.
So no hills, from Barnes to Waterloo. And at one point, in the Dove pub near Hammersmith, we encountered a wedding. And it's, you think, on your big day, it's your big day, and you come to the Dove, which is a very nice pub in Hammersmith, and you encounter a run, drink, run event.
Yeah, but I think if you're having your wedding in a pub, you can...
You know, ask for it.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, but, you know, you the clientele are going to be your guests.
That's true. You take the rough with the smooth. But, yeah, it was good.
Some sweaty runners.
Yeah, there's about 20 of us.
Oh, wow.
So quite good,
Strong field.
And actually, I'm particularly proud of a few of the names that were constructed. So we had...
What do you mean, names?
So basically, you couldn't compete as Ben Hobson on the Half Pint Half.
Oh, okay.
You need to have a Half Pint Half name, a run, drink, run name.
Oh, right.
So you could be Mojito Farah.
Very good.
Or Sir Roger Budweiser was another good one.
That's very good.
We had Paula Red Stripe in the past. Brendan Foster's, that's easy.
That's too easy.
And there's a few that were kind of off-piste. So we had Mary Queen of Scotch was another one.
Good.
Sambuca L. Jackson. Martini Luther King. I mean, the list goes on. Anyway, it's a lot of fun, and we'll probably have another go next year and hopefully encounter another wedding. Who knows?
Well, that sounds very fun.
Yeah.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Let's get our guest of the week in, Ben.
Oh, the jingle.
Come on in, Isaac. This is, imagine sort of The Who. It's a collaboration.
Imagine The Who.
It's a collaboration.
And then immediately forget what The Who are like.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Great, mate.
Welcoming to the studio, complete unknown, Isaac Williams.
Thank you for having me back.
I'm joking, of course, Isaac. You are a renowned sports journalist.
What an honour. Back by literally no demand whatsoever.
Well, in the upcoming issue of Runner's World, you've written a very interesting piece about the rise of virtual running. And to set the scene, Ben, I'd like you to read the opening paragraph, if you would, in your most futuristic voice.
We humans, so the best-selling story goes, were born to run. But while the basic movement mechanics haven't changed much since we climbed down from the trees, our reasons for running have altered greatly. The hunt for prey has been replaced by the hunt for PBs. And now, like sighting before it, running has finally set foot into the virtual world.
Very good.
Thanks. Excellent.
Isaac, well,
sort of futuristic, sort of creepy again.
Tell us more, Isaac. What do we mean by virtual racing?
Virtual races are kind of races by name only. So they tend to be kind of individual challenges rather than races in the kind of traditional sense. And while you do have platforms like Zwift, like you mentioned earlier, and Run Social, that do allow you to kind of compete against others in kind of real time. Most virtual races are kind of distance or elevation challenges where you kind of have to run a marathon or achieve a certain amount of elevation that needs to be completed over the course of a month, a week, or sometimes in one go.
Do you think that the virtual is less intimidating than the real world race? So this is why the rise has been so sort of like emphatic to begin with, is that there's not the pressure of just attending the start line. You just do it when you want.
Yeah, that's definitely the kind of main part of their appeal, I think. A lot of people are put off traditional races because they find them quite intimidating. Yeah. Because of the kind of perceived pressure and the competition. But it doesn't matter how inclusive a race is. For complete beginners, just the mere fact of running alongside all those people can be quite a daunting prospect. So I think virtual races give runners the chance to kind of achieve something and get recognition for completing a distance or whatever the challenge might be without any of the kind of nerves associated with lining up on the start line.
I guess it's also a good solution for time-poor runners. I guess there's no, like, travelling to and from an event in the virtual world.
Yeah, there's no, like you say, there's no travel. I think even if you live 10 minutes from your local race, you still need to, you're still going to have to travel to the race. You're still going to have to get there half an hour before it starts at least, wait for your medal at the end, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Whereas with a virtual race, you can literally turn your phone on, hit record and away you go.
So how big a role does the bling, I guess, like race medals or something, particularly play in virtual racing?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a greater importance placed on medals in the kind of virtual racing world.
Right.
And I think that's mainly because for the organisers, the medal is really, it's kind of all they've got to focus on. Yeah. So they make more of an effort. And the medal's also what entices most racers to a virtual event. So from what I can work out, that means they just put more effort into them. So you have a kind of wide array of intricately designed medals, whereas with mass participation events, kind of,
it's a volume, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
Also, I guess like you can integrate loads of different extra challenges into one race. So not necessarily there'd be, and I mean, again, I'm speculating whether this happens, but there's like a finish the race bit, but there might be like a segment within the race that someone might get the fastest time for versus like ending just the general race sort of thing.
Yeah, so it's a bit more tailored to the kind of individual. Yeah,
That's interesting.
Some of these medals are nuts, aren't they? They're not like kind of a round piece of
no, you
bronze.
Get 3D, like moving parts and all sorts. Yeah, it's a big bad world out there.
Reason
medals.
Enough to have a go. Can I ask a really, really sort of basic question? I'm guessing that these virtual races, these are treadmill based, right?
No. So for the app based ones like Zwift and Run Social, they are.
Yeah.
You're on a treadmill. You've got a screen in front of you, and you've got an avatar who's kind of representing you on the screen.
Yeah.
But for many of them, you just need to submit evidence using like Strava or MapMyRun or whatever you use. And that's kind of it. So you can do it. That's the beauty of it. You can do it literally wherever.
Wherever you want.
If you wanted to, you could do it around your living room or just like around the park or whatever takes your fancy.
Yeah, it's versatile, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, and I think that a lot of these platforms are sort of, well, Zwift and those places, they have like fabricated realms that you live in, like Watopia and all these sorts of stuff. But more and more, I think that actual race courses will be integrated into what people can run.
Right. So you can do a virtual New York
marathon. So, you know, 500,000 people applied for London Marathon this year. So do you think that virtual races could kind of like fill that gap? I mean, are we going to see that on, like, in a few years' time, London Marathon will be taking place on the streets of London with the other 1.5 million who didn't make it in, just doing it virtually?
Yeah, you mentioned London Marathon there, but so New York City Road Runners teamed up with Strava last year to launch a virtual marathon for the New York City Marathon. And the kind of the prize on offer was guaranteed entry to this year's, so 2019's real world marathon. So I don't think they're ever going to plug the gap, so to say, but I think if you're applying for a big city marathon, you want the atmosphere, want the kind of camaraderie, blah blah blah, and no virtual event is ever going to replicate that. But yeah, I think with things like the New York Marathon, like if you can get a free place or whatever, I think they can be a kind of a stepping stone to the real thing.
I mean, so Zwift again, they have the cycling academies, and actually maybe a triathlon one as well now, which is they've done this previously, and that people submit their times and they race and then they take part in this sort of academy. And you can end up with a you join a pro tour team, so Dimension Data,
right?
And you can win a spot on a pro level team.
Wow!
So it's kind of like a new element to a training academy by just sort of sourcing the best people in the world via virtual racing.
Yeah. It's smart, isn't it? That kind of interface between the real world and the digital.
It just makes you think, like, you know, is GB Athletics, are they suddenly going to go, like, all right, well, look, we can't see, we rely on people attending athletics clubs.
Yeah, scouts and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so why don't we just cast the net wider and just like, oh, look, this guy's running 14-minute 5Ks everywhere. Like, let's find out who he is.
Yeah. Oh, it's a good point, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a little bit there about the kind of big city marathons and how, like, you're going to struggle to recreate the, you know, the sense of excitement on the streets of London that you will if you're running around your own living room. Are any of these apps making efforts to make it more sociable, or is it very much a kind of solitary thing?
Like I mentioned, the kind of treadmill-based apps where you have an avatar on the screen, that they allow for a bit of interaction with kind of fellow runners who are doing that same race at the same time.
Yeah.
And with Strava, you can obviously give kudos and comment on people's efforts if you see they've done a specific challenge or race or whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's no getting around the fact that at the moment, at least, most virtual races are kind of a much more solitary pursuit. And that, again, is part of their appeal because it's, because of there's no logistics involved, and people who may be intimidated by larger scale races can kind of do it in their own time on their own.
I think you mentioned logistics, and I think that we've had people talk about the environmental impact of larger races. So I guess this, again, removes a whole heap of that. I mean, apart from, I guess, streaming costs to the environment.
Yeah, and medal production, I guess, is the only other thing. But the big city marathons are definitely making effort to clean up their app, but just by virtue of having thousands of people in one place at one time, it's going to create a lot of waste and kind of travel-related pollution. But with kind of virtual races, they're obviously not confined to a specific location. Yeah, like we said, just the medal production is the only real thing that's required, so they're clearly more sustainable.
Yeah. In Ben's incredible introduction, he alluded to the book Born to Run. There's a passage that actually you mentioned in the article. It says, you know, Chris McDougall wrote, the reason we race isn't so much to beat each other, but to be with each other. And I'm worried that virtual racing kind of completely misses out on some of that camaraderie. What do you think?
I think that's definitely the argument of someone who prefers real kind of races, real in inverted commas. But that camaraderie that many people do enjoy is a result of hundreds or thousands of people being in one place. Mm. And if you're a complete beginner or anyone who just prefers running alone, that's actually intimidating rather than something to kind of look forward to.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That quote suggests that we want to be with each other, doesn't it?
Precisely, yeah, precisely,
yeah.
Are there any other aspects of real-world racing that kind of the virtual will not always fail to replicate? I mean, we talked about environment and atmosphere and all those sorts of things, but is there sort of like a fundamental? What do you think it covers off?
I guess the crowd supports. That's a major factor in these kind of big city races that you're never going to be able to replicate. And also the kind of the post-race feeling of sharing, that of achieving something with all those people, it's like an euphoric moment, isn't it? And I think no matter how inclusive these virtual races become, you're never going to be able to replicate crossing that finish line with thousands of other people.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, I'm as you know, not a particularly digitally savvy person, but I really struggle to completely get the appeal of this. You know, after writing the article, were you more tempted to have a go at kind of a virtual race?
I definitely understood the world better. I think I like you, was quite sceptical about it beforehand. Mm. And one of the main criticisms levelled at virtual racing is that it's just a way for people to make easy money because they just have to produce medals and they kind of farm them out.
Yeah.
But having spoken to a few runners who do enjoy virtual racing, it's kind of an excellent stepping stone to the real thing. And also it's a way to kind of get some recognition for all the hard work you put in training.
Yes.
You can you know, get a medal and get some acknowledgement.
Yeah.
I don't think they necessarily need to be seen as kind of competing against real world races. I think they can kind of complement the real thing.
Thank you very much, guys, for coming on to Runners World Podcast to talk about virtual racing. I think I might have a go.
This
is the Runner's World podcast.
Stephen Cousins was an early adopter to the Zwift platform and was the first to run and stream a marathon. Now he is a level 21 Zwift runner. Some of you might have seen his YouTube channel, Film My Run, or even joined him on a run on a live stream around Watopia on Monday Run Club. We are delighted to have him with us now. So I think we've just had Isaac in, who's written a feature for us about virtual running, and we wanted to kind of get a take from someone who is passionately involved in it. What is it that you find so appealing about virtual running?
It's not that I find virtual running appealing. I would not, let me say it right at the start, I would not choose 100% of the time to go on a treadmill rather than run outside. It would be run outside much more of the time if that was the choice.
Yeah.
And I do the majority of my running outdoors. Sometimes the draw of running on a treadmill is necessity, and other times it is definitely for fun. So the third reason would be because I want to do a specific kind of training,
right?
Or I want to discipline myself in a particular way on the treadmill.
Got it. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I've used Zwift before, not as a race, but for specific training sessions, and found it super useful when time is sort of short and you're sort of forced indoors. I think that there's a real benefit to doing things like that.
Sure. I mean, like I said earlier, the first reason would be, and a lot of people use the treadmill because they simply can't get out of the house.
Mm.
You know, I've got kids that I have to look after. My wife is also a runner, and our club sessions are often shared. Sometimes she's out the house, and you know, I don't have a choice really. And that's why actually I came to run on Zwift in the first place, because I already had a treadmill in the house, which I used on a regular basis.
Right.
I've never called it the dreadmill. I've always found it to be a very useful part of my training. I think that I used the treadmill initially out of necessity. Then when Zwift came along, you know, we're either watching videos, aren't we, or we're staring at a blank wall. And I guess for some people it can get pretty boring.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of didn't for me, because in my head I always had a kind of goal I wanted to achieve. And I'm always thinking about what I'm doing on the treadmill and why I'm there and where I'm going next in the next 15 minutes or half an hour or whatever it might be. But for some people, you know, providing some entertainment is a vital part of being able for them to train on the treadmill or otherwise not train at all. So Zwift coming along was an absolute godsend for me and for a lot of people in terms of providing that extra bit of entertainment, and then it becomes more than that. It becomes somewhere where you actually do meet other people and kind of have a community. And I now see Zwift as like a second running club, because I do training sessions on there twice a week, Wednesdays and Mondays. The same people kind of tend to turn up. You get to know people's names. You have banter with them on tech. Yeah, and so it becomes more than simply a way to just be entertained and stop you getting bored on the treadmill. It becomes a whole new world of running with a whole new set of people and a whole new set of goals.
So this social side of it, because I think it is an interesting dimension to apps like Zwift that people might not expect. When these people are turning up, how are you kind of initiating banter and the kind of things that you would do in a kind of analog running club?
Okay, so it is still new technology, and what we do at the moment is very basic text messaging. So there is a feature on Zwift where if you press M on the keyboard, you can type a message.
Right.
You can do that on your phone as well. So you can as long as you're logged into Zwift with the what's called the Zwift Companion app on your phone, you can type a message on your phone. Now, Zwift themselves, HQ, are not terribly happy from a safety conscious point of view about people running on the treadmill and typing on their phone. So they are trying to develop newer, better ways of communicating i.e. voice chat of some description at some stage, but it's a little way off yet. It hasn't been developed yet. So we're still at the stage of typing messages to each other.
Right. But you often, because you have a YouTube channel which people can find, it's a Film My Run, right? That's correct?
That's right, yeah. Filmmyrun.com started off years ago, me filming my outdoor races and editing them down into little films, and I still do that. But I also now do a lot of live streaming of Zwift. And a lot of the regular runners will tune in to my live stream,
yeah,
and listen to me talking whilst they're running. So that and I can, if people are messaging me or sending messages that I can see on the screen,
yeah,
rather than having to type, I can simply talk back to them because I know that they're listening.
What would you say to anyone, Stephen, who's considering taking up virtual running?
Take it up. You know, there's no reason. Treadmill running doesn't have to be this kind of scary or annoying or boring or dull thing that you sometimes have to do or swear blind that you never, ever will do. So help me God. You know, add treadmill running to your training regime. One thing I find in terms of training, treadmill running is a really good leveler. You don't have curbs or tree roots or wind or traffic lights or other people or dogs that are going to get in your way. You simply run on a flat surface. You don't have to concentrate on anything other than your form, your technique, your cadence, your stride length, your body posture. All of those things are brought right into focus when you're running a treadmill. Yes. The mechanics of your running might be slightly different, but in general, what you're achieving is a focused run that you can't really get anywhere else. Also, it's very good at teaching you to keep to speed, keep to a pace. You set your treadmill at 12 kilometers an hour or whatever it might be, and you run at that pace for half an hour, when you get out onto the road, you will be able to feel a lot better what a particular pace is all about, and being able to stick to that pace and getting even splits. It's really good for that kind of training.
Oh, brilliant. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and to giving some insight into the world of virtual racing. I think it's something that we'll probably all be doing a lot more of in the near future.
Let's hope so. My life depends on it.
Cheers, Stephen. Thanks
a lot, Stephen. Cheers.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I've got a story that actually genuinely affected me, so I want to discuss this with you.
Yeah.
So 70-year-old amateur runner, and I think that's an important point to make, Dr. Frank Mezza was accused of cheating at the LA Marathon back in March and faced unrelenting online scrutiny, which basically became bullying. So now his race results have been under suspicion. A few of them have in the past as well. LA Marathon themselves decreed that he had violated a number of race rules. Mm. But it's the online, I'm going to call it the online mob mentality that has sort of developed alongside this sort of investigative looking into people's race results.
Yeah.
Which have, you can't say that they've resulted in a man taking his own life, but
But that's what happened, did it?
So essentially, he went for a run. Yeah. At the sort of the peak of this investigation, he went for a run and his body was found in the LA River, and the coroner report decreed suicide.
Right.
This was very much in line with a lot of online reporting on his race results. So it wasn't just a sporadic thing, it's sort of like a culmination of all of this sort of stuff. And I am of the standpoint that I think this online mentality and the attitude of being righteous online far outstrips any issue I have with someone cheating in a race.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, mate, isn't it? I think we all want a fair and honest race, don't we?
Of course.
And I sympathise with people who want to uphold those values. And I reckon that people see themselves as kind of protectors of the sport's integrity, and that is noble in a way. But it's
self-decreed, though.
Yeah, and I think it's also that the nature in which you go about sort of outing people, because a lot of people who cheat, as wrong as that is, are kind of psychologically vulnerable, like the reasons for cheating.
Yeah.
And the kind of headspace you have to be in to cheat in the first place. Yeah, I think actually we need to be more careful about how we go about kind of...
vilifying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so. And it's a tricky one. And obviously when it has tragic results like that, or seemingly has led to tragic results like that, then that's something's gone wrong, hasn't it? And actually, I mean, unfortunately, online stuff just leads to...
It's just sort of
extreme kind of
keyboard warriors,
yeah,
tapping away that, you know, oh yeah, this guy's scum because he supposedly cheated. You know, I mean, I feel like that crosses over into a very dark world of sort of like where people identifying as runners have some sort of sense of absolute infallibility to sort of criticize others, or not infallibility is not the right, but just an overarching like sense of being able to sort of rain justice down upon everyone.
I still think the principle of cheating is wrong and should be something. If you suspect someone's cheated, I do think that
I agree
that should be called out. It's just a nature in which it doesn't, somebody cheating at a race doesn't make that person an absolutely abhorrent human being. And I think that's the reaction you get, is this, you know, this scumbag has cheated and stuff. And I think that's where it gets wrong. It could be like, there are many reasons for cheating, none of which I'm would justify, but actually quite a lot of them are coming from a kind of place of vulnerability. I mean, I remember there was a high profile event like this, which was Rob Young, who attempted to run across America, and it was later found out that he'd very likely been cheating. And again, I think it was right that he was called out on it, but the nature of the way he was called out was fairly remorseless, actually. And Rob Young, like a lot of people who cheat, came from, you know, incredibly challenging background and a vulnerable person, really. And it's kind of, I think that has to be taken into account when we call people out on that kind of thing.
Well, anyway, I wanted to just highlight that one because I thought it was a super sort of important issue as a subtext of running, which is becoming more and more prevalent, is this sort of online chasing down of people who are seen to have done wrong
by the sport. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I wonder what our listeners have to say. Let us know what you think. Is it, are people absolutely within their right to call out people in any way they want, or do we actually need to be a bit more sensitive when we do this stuff? podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
It's that time of the week again.
His fingers on a button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Kerry McCarthy and his weekly running news.
Ah, Mr. McCarthy, welcome back with all your wonderful news. What's been going on?
Afternoon. Thank you for having me again. There's been quite a lot going on in the last week. I'm going to start with the Race to the Stones Ultra Marathon, which took place at the weekend. Yep. For those of you who don't know, it's a 100-kilometre run in Wiltshire across the Ridgeway, which is said to be the oldest road in Britain.
I've ridden my bike along it.
Have you?
Yeah.
OK, this isn't the Cyclist World podcast.
Just,
so that's
just FYI.
Completely irrelevant, but thank you for that. Anyway, as I was saying... it was the Race to the Stones at the weekend. A very good runner by the name of Tom Fairbrother was taking part in it for the first time. And in fact, it was his first ultra marathon, I think, of any sort.
Right.
And he won it, except he didn't. He took a wrong turning at 57 miles, which was, I think, about sort of five-ish miles to go. He, let's say, misinterpreted one of the arrows. There's some confusion as to what actually happened, but he ended up taking a wrong turning. He had to get his phone out, check Google Maps. He got to the finish and actually ran an extra mile. And having been in telephone communication with the organisers, had said, who had assured him that if he got to the finish, he would still win.
Right.
He got there in first place, I think about 8 minutes ahead of the guy in second place.
Yeah.
Was presented as the winner. Everything was hunky-dory. He was delighted. And then the race director came over and said, there's been a terrible mistake. You are, in fact, disqualified.
Right.
So no finishing time, no place.
No finishing time, no medal, no nothing. Thanks very much, but, you know... No, thanks.
So was the mistake refers to the reassurance that he was going to win?
Yeah, there was basically a mix-up in communication, as far as I can tell. They had thought that he had gone wrong but had got himself back on the correct path.
Okay.
What happened was that he made his own way using Google Maps to get to the finish. Now, added on extra distance,
right.
But because the last few miles weren't on the official course, he gets disqualified. Right. So I bring that up, obviously, because it's a good story, unless you're Tom. Sorry about that, Tom. I'm sure there'll be many more victories for you. But because I kind of, the first time I read it, I thought, is that a bit harsh? If you go wrong in a race and you actually run extra distance, should you be disqualified?
So it's basically if you haven't completed the official course.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which, in my head, makes sense, because then if you suggest that, then people could divert at any point willingly and get to the finish... And win. I know he's gone further.
Yeah.
So that's not... I'm just saying, if you put the scenario of here's a race and, you know, you can do half of it and then make up the rest.
I think that the principle is sound. Yeah. I wonder if it's just discretion. Because I remember the Red Bull steeplechase race?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember Ricky Lightfoot, the great sort of fell runner, turned up once. And he won and he went slightly wrong on the course. And it was everyone knew he went slightly wrong. But he won by a similar margin, I think. And they decided in that instance that, well, it was, you know... It was an honest mistake. You won. It wouldn't have affected the result. And that victory stood. So there's a kind of inconsistency with this stuff.
Got it.
But I agree that in principle, following the correct course is, of course, an important part of...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. In no way do I think that he you know, the disqualification seems fair, but I'm just like, I'm playing devil's advocate in that way.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
The course is the course, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
But if you run further, though...
And he still finished about 8 minutes ahead of second place. But, you know, it's an interesting one, but we'll be interested to hear what you guys think. Let us know at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Next up, we have a new world record in the women's mile, which was broken on Friday at the Diamond League in Monaco. Sifan Hassan of the Netherlands broke it. She ran 4:12:33, which is... Ooh. Fractionally faster than my own mile PB. she beats a record which had been standing for 23 years.
Wow.
She didn't break it by that much, but obviously it's fine margins when you're talking about the mile. I believe the previous record was 4:12:56 by Svetlana Masterkova of Russia, which I think she broke in 1996. So I think that is pretty
phenomenal
all round.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I was looking at the splits. I think she ran 64-64, 62-62, roughly speaking.
Wow.
So not only is that consistent, it's like a negative split for the second half.
Jeez.
So she didn't go out hard and hang on. She kind of went out and then went, right, I'm ramping this up.
Yeah. It's interesting because there was, at the night of the 10,000 metre PBs, like kind of a side to that was the media mile.
Yeah.
So lots of media types like ourselves had a go at running a mile. And there's some good runners amongst it, but...
That's a privileged bunch.
You know, you realise there were some good runners who were running low fives.
Yeah.
And you think that's actually pretty good sort of club runner territory. You think getting down low fours, amazing.
Yeah. It's astonishing. But, you know, I think you have to have pretty much a lifetime of that base of speed training to be able to do
100%.
It. I remember the ultra runner and author Darren Ann Finn wrote a feature for us once a few years ago on how he had used to run shorter distances. And he spent quite a while trying to get below 5 minutes for the purposes of this feature. And I think we had to postpone the feature the first time because he was having such a hard time doing it. And I think it took him, Darren, if you're listening to this and we've got it wrong, apologies, let us know. But I think it was somewhere between 6 months and a year.
Yeah,
to take about 30 seconds off his time. So it just shows how difficult it is that when you get down to those speeds. You can take great chunks off. Once you get down to about kind of six-ish, then it gets pretty hairy. And finally, just a heads up for fans of doing all sorts of races, Runners World are going to be partnering with the race portal letsdothis.com later this year. There's going to be an enormous jamboree, basically a huge award ceremony taking place in October. Basically a celebration of mass participation events. I think, as I mentioned on last week's podcast, mass participation has gone down, not just in the UK, but in other countries. And we, and Let's Do This, obviously think there's we should be pushing races more. Everyone loves doing them, whether it's for the bling or the sense of achievement or the T-shirt or whatever it is. And we want to encourage people not only to take part in races, but to put them on. And the way to do this is obviously to help publicise them. So Let's Do This are encouraging people to go onto their portal and to rate the races that they've run. If you enter a certain number, you can enter a prize draw to get all manner of prizes. If you're an organiser, if your race hits a certain number of positive reviews, you will go through to a second round at the end of the summer. You will possibly get onto a shortlist. And the winners for 13 different categories across marathon, half marathon, 10K, etc., etc., will be announced at the Challenge Awards, co-hosted by us on letsdothis.com at the Queen's Club, Andy Murray's favourite tournament, on the 18th of October. And there are quite a lot of money up for grabs, actually. There's apparently up to 10 grand in prize money for each winning category event. So if you're an existing race organiser, you're thinking about putting on an event, get involved.
Sounds good.
Yep.
I might get the half-point-half on there. What do you think?
No.
You'd get some cracking votes afterwards,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
If you got everyone to vote after about 8 miles, you'd probably... Yeah.
Well, Kerry, that's great. Thanks very much for coming on again. Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, mate.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guests, Isaac Williams and Stephen Cousins, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more from the wide world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes, and thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.